Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome once again to the Android Developers Office Hours. This is the EMEA edition, where we are answering any and all questions Android developer for all of you who are awake during the middle of the afternoon in the European time zones. I'm Sparky. I'm based in Munich, Germany, and I'm also joined by Nick and Rich, and is that Matt in London?
Yeah. Hi, everybody.
We're here and ready to welcome you to the post IO resumption of our regularly scheduled weekly office hours. So with that, let's see who's in the Hangout and what did you think of Google I/O?
Hey,
how about you, Hani? What did you think of Google I/O? Did you see any of it?
Did, but his microphone's not turned on. So in the meantime, hey Al, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Rich.
Johannes is representing the silent majority.
Today he's going to bring all these questions to you in sign language. I thought it was cool. It's always a great event. Went last year, went this year. It's always good to see stuff. It's always a little disappointing for us European developers to see US-only products, but that's the way things go. That's the world we live in. So I've had a lot of fun with the queue, though.
US products like the Jelly Bean rollout, which is happening across Europe today.
US products like the Glass Developers Kit, which had me grumbling for days.
So which is worse? Is it worse to be a European with no expectation ever of getting these things, or is it worse to be an American transplanted into Europe, knowing that because of where my account was created, I have access to some of these things, but when I try to actually navigate to their pages, it says, this doesn't work here?
I think you're in the worst position. Carrot is dangling close to your nose.
Sparky and his first world problems. Okay.
So, Al, you've been having some fun with the Nexus Q, I've seen, on some of your posts on Google+.
Yep.
What did you manage to get to do so far? It was one of my favorite lines in the keynote when it was... described, was it? They said eminently hackable.
It's incredibly hackable. You can unlock the bootloader, so once the source code hits the Android open source project, you're going to be able to build your own firmware, do anything you want with it. I've had it running pretty much most of the major Android apps, including the Play Store, Chrome, you name it, it'll do it. It's just a case of working out a good user interface to it. If you hook up a USB on the go micro USB to a USB host adapter, you can hook up mice, keyboards to it. It really is one of those devices that it's going to have a big story to tell. It's just up to everybody to see how they want to use it. And in some ways, I think it's nice that there's no guidance. It's a case of here's a device, do something cool with it, and it'll be interesting to see what everyone comes up with.
Very cool. So you're basically just using ADB install to just like push stuff onto the device. So once you've got a launcher on there, it's pretty easy to do some things, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Once you've got ADB install to install the apps, you can then switch the micro USB cable across to the USB on the go one, plug a mouse in, and you've got yourself a control method. So you can do, I was playing Angry Birds on it using the mouse. You can do pretty much anything you want because the media APIs are the same, the video APIs are the same. There's no special features or special APIs for the queue. It's just a case of if it's an Android app, you can run it on there as long as you don't rely on things like multi-touch or a camera.
So have you had any, have you had a look at the build.prop and see what properties it reports? I mean, do you have any problems installing apps if they say they require a touchscreen or anything like this?
I haven't looked at the build.prop. A lot of the default properties mean you can use a mouse instead of a touchscreen. Multi-touch is the big no-no. If anything needs multi-touch, that won't work. And of course, things like the camera, there's just no camera in it. But a lot of Android apps will just work straight off the bat. It's just about making sure the experience on a TV screen is usable and is reasonable for the size of the screen. I think London have frozen again.
So since you mentioned the keynote, I didn't see most of the keynote live because I was working out in the lobby, but I've seen some of the playback, and I think my favorite comment by far is when the skydivers are on their way down, and I think it was Sergey who said something like, "Vic, how's this for a hangout on air?"
Yeah, that was an extremely cool demo. It's definitely one of those that's going to go down in history.
Yeah, I think my favorite comment is someone just said, "We won the internet," so I agree with.
Was that you won it as a prize, and it's being presented to Sergey next week?
We won one internet. Anyway, I/O was like weeks ago now. Like,
done. Built. Posted up some instructions. If anyone's having trouble building it on a Mac, have a look at my Google Plus stream. I've put up how you can build it on OS X Lion with the latest Xcode version.
Brilliant. Thanks for that. That's very kind of you.
Brilliant.
No worries. And yeah, it's all there. All the goodness is there for anyone to play with.
So have you built it as a ROM that runs on any of your other devices yet?
I have it as a ROM running on my Galaxy Nexus, a custom-built AOSP ROM. Okay.
Nice, good workout.
JVQ and the guys in his team do a great job of merging in all the stuff internally, and they always make sure it's buildable on a device when they release it. So it literally was for me a case of typing make and a couple of extra commands, and hey presto, I got myself a working ROM.
That's excellent. Nice. I love these kind of things.
Brilliant.
So we have loads of questions this week in the moderator. So unless we have any direct questions from a Hangout to kick off with from Charles, Johanny, or Al, we'll start working through the moderator.
I was going to put one out to Matt, as I see sitting there quietly in the background. Just a quick
I was going to put one out to Matt, as I see
just
sitting
a quick thing,
there
Matt,
quietly.
Is there a recommendation for how you think developers should use second screen in applications?
Sorry, can you just repeat that? We had a bit of feedback on this end.
Sure, no worries. Are there any recommendations about implementing the second screen features of Google TV in Android applications? So should developers be looking to create separate apps, or should they look to use second screen as a feature of their app when their app's also running on a Google TV device?
So I think at the moment we're still kind of going down the route of promoting a single APK. But I think a lot of developers are kind of getting to a point where if the content doesn't really make sense to be the same on both, they probably will go down the separate APK route, which I think it does depend on the app. So it's nice to have a single APK and share code, but essentially if they're going to go down two very different routes, even though they're going to be working with each other, then yeah, just go for a multiple APK. I mean, it's whatever makes sense, I think. It deviates so much from the phone tablet realm that you've really just got to think what's going to make your life as a developer a little bit easier.
Cool, thanks.
Okay.
Hey guys, I just have one question, if you don't mind me asking quickly.
Sure.
Not a problem, go ahead.
It's just to do with the top developer badge. Mm-hmm. You may or may not be able to answer this, but we have a client who has an app in the Play Store that's very popular. It's got about 2.5 million or so downloads. And they were sort of wondering how they could earn this top developer badge, if there was any formal procedure, or was it just purely a case of you guys in the developer relations team pick developers occasionally?
So it's not down to us at all, at the developer relations team. If you have a look through Dan and Ian's video from I.O., you can see where the selections are made. They're made deep in an underground layer, made underneath Mountain View by the editorial team. Occasionally, we do recommend developers for them to review, but for the most part, they're scouring the Play Store themselves, looking for people who look like they've earned the top developer badge.
It tends to be a bit of a pipeline as well. It's the same similar criteria as featuring. You know, we have people looking out across the market for good apps, watching the trending lists and so on, as well as, you know, developer relations are working with directly, and so that feeds into a pipeline for that featuring, and it's generally those kind of apps which get narrowed down to apps which you know, we might want to make Epson's choice, or you know, a developer who's got a great track record of making, like, you know, high quality applications which might get the top developer.
Okay.
So it's kind of the same kind of pipeline, really, same kind of process. What's the app out of interest?
It's the Skyscanner app.
Skyscanner, the flight tracking, the
yeah.
Okay. From what you guys said, it sounds like it would need multiple apps from a developer rather than just one. Is that the right way to think?
It depends, yeah. But
you stand a better chance if you've got multiple high-rated, lots of install kind of apps, but you are going to get developers who do get the badge with one application. I think if you look through some of the big names out there, you'll see that they have the top developer badge. We do use it to signify at times that it's a trusted developer as well as a top developer.
Okay, so there's nothing that we, the Skyscanner could do to sort of put themselves out there as looking to have the top developer badge?
I guess they just have done. That's okay. The most they can.
Fair enough.
There's no formal process or submission process or anything like that, no.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for that.
This is as close as it gets. Okay, let's head off to the moderator then. We've got a lot to get through in the next 49 minutes. Do you want to take over, Sparky? Also, someone just mentioned there's a feedback, a three-second audio feedback. Are any of the other people in the Hangout hearing that?
I had it briefly when I was asking my question when you guys asked me to repeat it, but I've not heard it since then.
Anyone else having troubles with the audio? I'll just move our speakers and microphone further apart. This may be the last of the Hangouts that we do from this room. We're hoping to shift to a Hangout studio very shortly, either next week or soon after, so the quality of the Hangout should improve no end. That's just the quality of the video, not the quality of the content. Obviously, there's no improving perfection. Sparky, then, do you want to have a look at the moderator?
Yeah, so I don't know what's going on. You guys don't seem to be having the audio feedback anymore, but I'm getting it. It's about, I don't know, 10 seconds.
I'm getting it now with Sparky.
Yeah, I'll put it with Sparky. It's horrific.
Oh, stop.
Okay, just check which open windows you've got. If you've got the YouTube window open as well, we were getting some issues before. Which caused us to drop out? Come on, let's move this camera around. Hey, Doran, as well. Good to see you there in the Hangout. Thanks for coming along. Do you have any questions for us today?
I just joined. I'm new. I'll start by listen mode, and I'll move to thinking a bit later.
You haven't come in with a killer Android technical question for us.
No. I just installed Google Hangout now. It's my first experience, so wow.
The first ever Google Hangout?
Yeah.
There you go. Well, this one's live. You should know that this is live on air on YouTube as well. We should probably mention that. We usually do a disclaimer at the start of each of these, saying this is a Hangout on air. It's live on YouTube for anyone to watch, and also during the Hangout, we won't make any announcements about roadmaps or product releases.
Superb day.
So I think Sparky is back with us again now.
I am back with you, and yes, you were exactly right. It was the YouTube window. I didn't even realize it was up because it was hidden behind my Hangout window.
I am so much better.
Yeah. Let's see if I can find that moderator with just a sec. I had to close the that combined omnibus window, so now I'm just bringing up the bare moderator.
Right.
Okay.
I kindly linked to it as well, and it's also in the
top rated question. It says VLC for Android developer here from Paris, France. Allô, bonjour. Do you plan to support the distribution of multiple APK architecture based for a single application? It says we don't want to have just a generic 20 meg APK out of which you pick only one architecture. So this is a surprisingly popular request, I think, given that there's like hardly any devices out there that aren't ARM based. But you know, of course, anything that just runs in Dalvik doesn't need to select based on architecture. It's really only for APKs that have a native component. And I don't think we've announced anything on the in that regard. So, you know, going back to what Rich was saying.
I think we've got some questions in the moderator which we might have tackled last week, with this being one of them, that, yeah, we get this feedback that you want to switch on ABI for multi-APK, and it's on the roadmap, just don't know when. But thank you for the feedback. We'll feed that through to the developer pub site team.
Yeah. So let's see. Next one. My widgets stop interacting with my application. One of the buttons is really simple. It has a pending intent to start the application's main activity. what could stop a pending intent from working? And basically, how can you get some sort of inspection or debugging insight on pending intents? He says, can you get logcat info? I would presume that means or anything else. I guess my first question is, are you doing anything to, say, refreshing the pending intent when, say, either when it fires, like if you click the button and it fires, are you refreshing it with code? Or if you're leaving your activity and basically, if you're doing anything that restarts your app or activity, are you refreshing your pending intent at any time? And do you guys have anything to offer on that?
Yeah, I mentioned we had this one last week as well. We're going to have to ditch down to, I think the first one that we didn't answer was the blur mask filter question, because we don't have your access to the moderator. We didn't tick them off. The other thing we did say last week is if you are debugging your application and you keep pushing new variants of it to the handset from your development environment, then you have to re-add the widget each time, as the widget will become disassociated from the application. But other than that, in a production environment, it shouldn't be happening. The pending intent should remain associated with the application. It will launch up and be fine.
Do you know of anything that would, like any particular events that cause a pending intent to get dropped or obsoleted or something? Okay.
Not.
If the pending intent taking place and not being received by the application, there should be a message in Logcat which says that the intent's been fired, even if the application's not received it.
Yeah, I agree. I was just admiring the little jelly bean statue in the background full of jelly beans. All right, so let's move on then. We've got a couple more, just slightly further down. Did you get an answer for the blur mask filter question, Sparky?
For the which one?
Blur mask filter.
Not yet. I reported it as, I filed it as a bug this afternoon, and of course the Mountain View guys haven't come online yet, so they haven't seen it.
Excellent. That's the kind of power you have when you file a question inside the office hours. So the question was, Android blur mask filter has no effect on canvas.draw oval or for any other shape while the text is blurred on 404. Apparently, it's been filed as a bug now.
Also, my comment there is out of date. I took the information that he posted to Stack Overflow, and I made an app that uses his code. So,
fantastic.
Yeah. So I attached that to my bug. So the guys on the Android team should have no excuse to say, oh, we couldn't reproduce it here.
Sorry, I'm Fassi Amadan, and that is my bug. I've been actually tinkering with it for over a week. Okay. And I just couldn't figure out what was wrong, and some other guy has posted that it worked perfectly on Gingerbread. But I'm not sure if Gingerbread has hardware acceleration, or does it?
No, it doesn't.
That's why it worked on Gingerbread, yeah. Mm. Thank you.
So on Ice Cream Sandwich or Honeycomb and above, you can turn off hardware acceleration for that component if you want to make sure that it is the hardware acceleration. It's possible that it is. And then some of the hardware acceleration issues were fixed again in Jelly Bean. So you may just need to turn it off for Honeycomb and Ice Cream Sandwich if you find it is hardware acceleration related.
Right. And also a note on that is if you set your target API at 15 for Ice Cream Sandwich, then you're automatically turning on hardware acceleration. So you might not have realized you turned it on.
It was intended to be, because it's quite it's a heavy application, and just computes a lot of floats and everything. So.
Yeah, so definitely have a play with the hardware acceleration.
Yeah.
Well, the hardware acceleration is not going to help with computational stuff. It's just going to help with the drawing pipeline.
Right.
For those kind of things, you might want to look at render script compute.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want
to... Okay, yeah, the next question in the moderator says, the Spotify app and other music apps have added cover art, images, and playback controls on the lock screen. Can you point me to the API, sample app, or tutorial to implement this myself? Sparky's posted a Stack Overflow link, which I haven't clicked through to, but the answer is remote control client.
Yeah, basically, there's some information out there that was actually provided by the guy who who publishes, is it called Widget Unlocker or Widget Locker?
This isn't, this isn't that though. This is talking about the official remote control client. So this, as of Ice Cream Sandwich, there's, this is what Spotify and the built-in music app and other apps like TuneIn Radio use. There's an official way on the Android, like stock lock screen, to post the album art and the images and so on and the metadata and have the playback controls. So you need to look at the android.media.remotecontrolclient. That's the class you want to interact with to do that.
Okay.
I don't know if there is a sample code app for that yet. Do you know, Sparky, has it been added to the random play, music playback app?
I haven't taken a look at it.
Okay. I'm not sure that it will be, but if you take a look at the remote control client class, then you can come back to us here if you have any follow-up questions on that.
There's a bit of sample code actually in the API docs for remote control client class, so hopefully that'll be enough to get them going.
Yeah. Hope so. Should we go to the next question?
Sure. I'm just looking through the comments on the Google Plus thread. There's quite a few comments about how do you start up as a brand new Android developer and how do you install the toolchain. Apparently, it may, the documentation may have got out of sync with the latest Android developer tools.
Oh, dear.
We did notice this. We were doing code labs at Google I.O. this year, and the first part of the code lab is to import the project into Eclipse. And we started the code lab at the same time as they released Android Developer Tools 20, which changes the Eclipse import process. So absolutely nobody can complete step 1.1 of the code lab. But the steps on developer.android.com/ at the start for installing Eclipse should all be up to date, so we'll get that checked out if they're not.
Yeah.
I would also say that unless your app is really complex, you can go a long, long ways not importing the project. My typical approach in Eclipse is either to start a project with an external source rather than importing it, or failing that, or possibly in combination with that, I can just create a basic project with the Hello World app and then copy the source, the res folder, the source and res folders, and the Android manifest.xml into the new project and just use those and just go from there.
Huh. Sneaky. Or use IntelliJ.
Yeah, still advocating IntelliJ personally.
Yeah, I've been an Eclipse user for a long, long time, and I've always been pretty suspicious of any import wizards related to Eclipse, which is why I kind of learned early to just copy files into a template app and go from there.
All right, do you want to hit up the next question then?
Let's take one from the comment thread. They've got a question here. It says, is developing for the latest API level will make my app run on all Android devices, say 13 or 12? So I'm going to interpret that. I think there's two things you can say when you say developing for the latest API level you need to be bearing in mind. There's the API level you're building against, so you know that's the version of the SDK you're linking at build time. And then there's also the attribute in your manifest called target API level. So those two things can differ, but I would argue it's probably the same. So I would say that you always want to set both of those to build against and to target to the latest version of the Android release which you've you know about and you've tested your application on. And then you can set a different min SDK, which is the minimum version of Android in which it will run. So by setting those two things, that defines the level, the devices that your app will run on. So you need to be aware when you set them different, you're basically signing a contract saying, I promise not to call any newer APIs on any older releases. And this is actually what I gave a code lab on in Google I.O. So if you go to developers.google.com/IO and look in the code lab section, there's one about building backward compatible Android apps. And from there you'll be able to find my slides and a code lab you're able to work through. So hopefully that answers that question.
I would just reinforce on that your target API level is not the maximum that your app will run on. It's simply the maximum whose features your app already knows about at the time you write it. But any device that has backwards compatibility is just about all due. Even on a newer OS, we'll still run it just fine. So don't be afraid to put your target SDK as high as you can, and then your min SDK to the lowest you'll support.
It's also probably worth mentioning that the min SDK, it is a filter in market. So if you set it too high, some users won't be able to see it if they have an older device. So it's best to check that the features you're using really do need that API level. And if it can be done with an API level or two before, it's worth dropping min SDK down.
Right. And for if you're looking for monetary justification, it's really nice if you can go back to 2.2 or 2.1. If you want to go really get the long tail, go back to 1.6. But you can cover like 95% of your possible marketplace by going back to 2.1.
Was there any update on recommended methods for using reflection to optionally degrade features so that you can support older versions of devices or older versions of Android as well as having features in the latest stuff?
Yeah, I prefer to API gate things these days. There used to be a need for reflection in 1.5 and 1.6. As of 2.0, you can include code inside the class files that wouldn't be able to run on the system as long as you don't actually run it.
Well, actually, I don't think there's ever really a need for reflection unless you're manually building against, linking against the lower API level and then trying to invoke, later added APIs. That's the only case I can think of where you need for reflection. The issue with the pre-2.0 class loader used to blow up if you try to import classes, which, running on a cupcake device. You can get around that with a factory pattern. Which is much nicer than using reflection, in my opinion, because you still get type safety and so on.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
So there's some chat going on in the GPlus space about getting started. Matt Storms is asking for some pointers on getting started. So it sounds like it's not really getting started with Android, it's getting started with kind of Java programming by the sounds of it. Does anyone have any top tips of great places to kind of bootstrap your Java development? I mean, there's Code Academy I've heard good things about. I'm not using it myself, but I've heard that's pretty useful for new starters.
I think that's more algorithm style.
There's a million tutorials on YouTube.
What was that, Yohani?
There's a million tutorials on YouTube. Just search for
tutorials. There's a lot of tutorials. I guess it's picking which one's a good one to start with is the hard bit.
Honestly, a lot of the introductory Android sample apps and tutorials also give a pretty good sort of gentle introduction to Java, especially the relevant bits.
Because the activities and so on can be quite overwhelming for somebody who doesn't understand objects or otherwise.
Yes.
Kind of step-by-step tutorial going.
Really old. It's part of the SDK, so yeah.
Yeah, that might be a good place to look. And someone,
Alex, is asking, when will I finally get the new developer console? I'm so excited. Like Rich said at the top of the broadcast, we can't really talk about dates because they'll probably change and they'll be wrong and we'll look silly. So all I can say is, you're doing the right thing, signing up for the preview. Team are working as hard as they can to get it out as soon as possible. It's just, things take time.
Well done in signing up for the preview as well. The preview link went live and I think maxed out during the I.O. presentation that announced the preview link was live. So if you manage to sign up, that's good, because if you try and get to the link now, it just says, thank you, we've already build our quota buckets. So you will be in one of the first groups of people to get it looks like when the rollouts do happen. We've got Trevor, who I might mute.
Yes, we can hear Trevor, so maybe he would like to say hello and tell us what's on his mind with regards to Android development.
Okay.
Strong silent type.
Stunned him into silence.
Ah, Anka chiming in the comments. Anka, our colleague, who's in Sydney. So it's, what, 10 o'clock there?
Yeah.
He's got a young baby, though, so he's probably up at all hours. Making an excellent point about that backward compatibility chat we're having earlier, saying that lint helps you out. So, yeah, very, very much so. I think one of the reasons people used to, you know, change the level of Android they were building against just to make sure they weren't invoking any new APIs, is now kind of obsoleted by the fact that you can use lint to do some static analysis of your code, and it will give you this new API warning if you're trying to invoke an API that was introduced later than the whatever you set as your min API level. So that's a really good point. That really helps. And it's used extensively in that code lab I mentioned, which Rich is linked to.
But you should still run it on an old device to try it out. For example, the pop-up works differently in ice cream sandwich than the old devices.
Gotcha. Nope. Can you say that again, Yohani?
Okay, speak closer to Mike. So you should still try to run the applications on old devices, even if you touch in links, because there's some things like the way pop-ups are cancelled in ice cream sandwich, they're different from the old ones.
Yeah.
But you need to see that the application still works. Don't trust the link. Hello.
It's true. Always test on a real device.
There we go, just driving this. Trying.
Another question from the moderator.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how far we're on the moderator. I mean, you guys ran a Hangout last week when I was here, so I don't know which ones you've covered or not.
Rich, you want to pick
one? Yeah, one more word. All right. JB,
yeah, I haven't done that. So one question says, Jelly Bean notifications with two actions, stop and play pause. For stop the notification list, disappears for play pause and you notify. What? I'm lost.
When you press stop, the notification list will disappear, but when you press play pause, the notification with the new icon is sent, but the notification list stays open. Are the two buttons at the bottom?
Yeah, so this is using, I think it's talking about the new Jelly Bean notification APIs. Is Frieda listening in? He might be able to clear stuff up.
He's not, but I know the project he's talking about. It's the Open Intents timesheet.
Yeah.
He's still pushing some code, and basically what he's trying to do is have stop a task, but not remove the notification from the notification bar. But what he's seeing is whenever stop's pressed, the notification is removed from the notification bar as well.
If the task stops, the notification disappears.
Yeah.
Seems
so, what, it's an ongoing notification for a background service?
What it basically is a time tracking application, and he's trying to use the stop button to stop the tracking of time rather than stop the application itself.
Yeah.
But he's seeing the stop button removes the notification.
Yeah, do you know if he's using the builder to build it up?
I don't. I've asked him for the source code, and he's trying to get that across to me, so he might have it later today, in which case I can update moderator with it.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to look at, because I know on the builder you can set auto-cancel, which I'm trying to wonder if it is bound to a service, whether auto-cancel will actually, you know, remove the notification when the service itself stops. So that'll be my first thing I'd look at. The API changed right towards just before we open source it. There used to be a window flag you could set to say whether to close the notification or not, but I can't remember. I think that got removed, so I have to check that. But yeah, it'd be nice to see the code that's you know, behind this behaviour.
Sure, I'll try and get a link up in moderator.
Has everyone played with the new notification APIs yet? It's probably one of the bigger developer-facing changes in JB. I mean, JB is a lot of polish and butteriness and, you know, smoothing things out. And not a ton of new developer features, but the notification APIs are pretty sweet. So if you've not looked at those yet, I highly encourage you to take a look.
Okay, what's the
anchor?
I'm
going to
it.
Super strong.
That's good. It will also help you.
Anyway,
should I take
another question?
Yeah. We're stumbling across more of the questions that we took last week now, but there was one. How long did Hangouts last week?
Is it maybe the volume keys question?
Yeah, you can go for the volume keys question. There seems to be quite a lot of backwards and forwards on that. You want to take that?
All right. So Johan from Netherlands says, I'm working on an app where he traps volume up and volume down, and on the Acer Iconia 7-inch tablet, the buttons seem to be reversed. Any idea why? I noticed that the buttons appeared to be reversed on the Nexus 7 as well, and also on an LG tablet that I've got. And then it just suddenly hit me. It's a portrait device. That 7-inch tablet is by default a portrait device. And when you hold it in portrait, then that lower button actually is volume down. But when you turn it landscape, hitting that button on the right makes the volume bar go to the left. So my thought is that it's intended to be a landscape device, and it's not remapping the sense of the buttons when you change the orientation of the device. I think it should remap the sense of the buttons as you change orientation. But I don't know that that's mandated by the platform or anything like that. I actually opened up I don't remember if it was a bug or a feature request on Jelly Bean that we should, in fact, change the sense of the buttons as we change the sense of the device. That was my answer to that question.
I mean, it seems very strange when you've got the device in landscape and you press up, and you press this way and it goes that way and vice versa. It's like the gear change in those Audi dual-clutch cars. You press the right-hand pedal and the gear goes down on the left-hand pedal. The display on the screen goes the opposite way to the actual pedals. It's very confusing. I'm sure they've changed that in their latest firmware as well. I'm sure we do it in ours.
There seems to be said for this, like the expectation that this bit of the button always turns the volume up. You know, you just always, if you go monkeying with that, if you, like, it's a stable experience right now, right? Like, I know that hitting that always turns the volume up. If mm-hmm. I go changing that around, flipping it, reversing it, I understand the issue. But I don't know. I'm sure there's tons of user studies and whatnot behind the choice. So I'll leave that to wiser and more tested people than I.
It just feels.
I mean, I guess part of the issue is which way is up. How do you define which way is up with the tablet? Whether you hold it one way, whether you hold it another way. How do you define what the up button is? And if you are going to have a consistent experience, one way up will be another way down. So it's
It's just the graphic on the screen moves the other way to the direction you're pressing the button. It's just
I think there's fair room for argument on both sides, because I think it is reasonable from a UX perspective to expect that the same hardware affordance, you know, the same hardware thing, has the same result every time. And that sort of runs contrary to the pressing the right button makes the slider go right, if you see what I mean.
Okay.
Maybe we should just change it. So if you're in landscape, the volume bar is like vertical rather than horizontal, and that'd be way less confusing.
Would
it? Yeah, because you're not touching on the left and it's going right.
We should have a second set of buttons here.
You're touching here and it's going right. Anyway.
Yeah.
I'm sure Matthias is on it.
Sorry, guys, I joined late.
Oh, yeah, we just answered your question.
Yeah. I'll watch it later. Maybe simply add a preference to reverse the effect of the volume button. Is that?
Oh, that would be a lot of music, right?
Less preferences.
Yeah.
You could, in theory, do it in the application by detecting the orientation of the device and then altering the action in response to when volume up or volume down.
Whatever we do, we need to keep it consistent across every application, right? So we either need to fix it in the platform if it is an issue, or just accept that this is...
Change it.
Okay.
accept that it is right the way that it is, and you're all just a bunch of monkeys.
What are you actually capturing the volume button for, Johan? Is it actually for a volume control, or is it something else?
Yeah, it's a volume control, but it's for a... how do you say it? A server. So I'm controlling an external device. It's basically a remote control that app that I'm implementing. So.
Okay. Can you say any more? Is it for Google TV or Nexus Q or anything? No, okay. Let's
No, but you could say, well, indeed. like increasing the volume of the next cube, like via your smartphone. Yeah. But it was just one particular device, so I'll figure it out. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you'll figure it out. Only two options, right?
Yeah.
Try them both.
This is an interesting app. Did anyone catch that new Twitter app, Tweet Lanes, that came out at the weekend, I think it was, which is using the volume keys to kind of step onto the next tweet in the stream, so you can sit mm-hmm. there and there just like tap, 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 yeah. without having to use the screen, which is kind of interesting, I thought. I prefer if it's smooth scrolled, because at the moment it jumped, which is a bit jarring. I prefer if it's actually use this view dot smooth scroll to, I think is the API I'd rather use, but hey, interesting idea. Do you want to go back to the moderator?
I think we may have completed the moderator.
Oh, interesting.
I know, right? So I was just having a quick look through the comments.
There's some new ones that just came in, I think.
In the moderator?
Yeah, like...
Oh, yeah. Up to
70 now. Why the Nexus devices no SD card slot? I'd like to buy a Nexus 7, but 16 gig isn't very much. It's all about cost. Adding card slots costs money. Adding making cases that can be opened up costs money.
I thought you were going to say it's all about the cloud.
Yeah, there's a better answer to that.
I'm sure you were going to say it's all about the cloud.
Oh, I knew I got it wrong. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so technically it's probably that cost, but the message is about the cloud. Why do you need...
Yeah, I've been using the 8 gig version, and I haven't really been butting up against it too much. I mean, I keep a bit of music, a couple of films, a few games, and it's not too... big a deal, really. I think I've run out once.
I'm the opposite. Yeah, I keep running out of space on the 8 gig. I'd love to switch to the 16, but of course you can just use a USB adapter and put in a 128 gig memory stick in the bottom. Maybe you can find a little tiny one. Maybe wrap it around the back. Find some kind of adapter. An external hard drive, but for the price,
what are you filling up an 8 gig tablet with? I mean, I've got my entire music collection on there and like a few dozen games, and I think I've got 6 gigs free.
Enough movies for a flight to San Francisco and back?
He's got 2 gigs of music to his name. That's crazy, dude. You must be using the cloud or something.
I'm using the cloud.
If I just show you my games on here, games these days are getting big, right?
It's games for me. It's like, yeah.
I have Dead Trigger, that's 600 megabytes. Shadowgun, that's a gigabyte. It's like... Samurai 2. I bought the games in the sale, really. It's the sales fault more than anything.
While we're talking about games and Nexus 7, please, 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 can everyone use some kind of syncing mechanism to sync progress between phones and tablets? Because I'm getting annoyed of having to play, catch up with my progress and play through a game twice on my phone and tablet, depending on what I have with me. So
you mean like the Google Drive API that the SDK is going to come
that's
out
That's a to. Perfect segue about what I was going to say next.
Have you seen their t-shirts? They have "I sync, therefore I am" on them.
No. Did you catch those at I.O.?
That's
yeah.
I have to get me one of them. That's a t-shirt that I don't have. What's going on?
I have it, Rich. This is scary. You're using the swag magnet.
Right. Badger, magnet, whatever. It's fine. How are we doing? Okay, so are there any more questions from inside the Hangout whilst we figure out what's next on the moderator?
I'll refer to one question from a newcomer who said, how long do the Hangouts usually last, and are you planning on always hosting them at 2 o'clock in the afternoon? Yes, they last an hour, and they're always going to be at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Wednesday, UK time. That's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Central Europe time.
We had that last week, and I answered it slightly different. I was like, they currently are, but is there any is it a bad time for you? But no one didn't hear anything back. Everyone... just seemed to say it was a fine time, so...
And we have a new
it's gonna stay.
single place for coordinating all of these on our Hangouts across all of the products, the Chrome Hangouts, the G Plus Hangouts, the Android Hangouts.
There's other products?
There's other products. They don't get green rooms like this. And that's at developers.google.com/live. Google Developers Live launched just before I.O. on June the 18th, and it's the single portal for finding out all the details of all these Hangouts, where you can post all the questions into those Hangouts and the different time zones you can watch the Hangouts in.
Which is incidentally why we didn't use the events functionality in G+. that I think we're trying to use live. That's where all of the Google developers hangouts and office hours and so on are going to be hosted. So I didn't want to splinter that presence really.
Is there any way of filtering the stuff on live? So I can only get Android stuff, or people can only get Chrome stuff?
There may not be yet, but I know when we create the event, it says which products it's for. So I'm sure, because the developer's live site's only just gone live, there's a whole team still working on the functionality for it. Maybe that will get added.
We'll feed that back soon.
Yeah, yeah. I can understand why you'd want to filter the rest of that out.
Then maybe we should use GPS event. Then we can all go into party mode and just post loads of photos
of ourselves on the Hangout.
Everyone will take a photo of where they are.
I did run an event for this Hangout, so it'll be interesting to see if there's pictures of Hangouts taking place in browsers on various people's desktops.
Did anyone join?
There were people who said they were coming, and I think most of those came.
I'm going to join your event now and post a photo. Talk amongst yourselves.
Someone wants to join in the Hangout. Who's that? Who do I have to take a look at Southern Band Running Office? Hugo.
Chandra.
Oh, I want to join. No, that's interesting. That was a problem. Please try again. I'm just trying to add you into the Hangout, Chandra. Some reason it's not letting me. What have you done wrong?
Is everyone signing up to Al's G-Plus event?
Right.
I've taken the first photo, so hopefully we can see how it comes out.
Come on, then.
So, Boyd's got an interesting question.
I think we've got a new question, the moderator here. I'm going to work on building an Android image for a new hardware device. Can't find any guide on how to customize system apps, like the ones that reference internal values and such, for example, Oxygen and Launcher. I would say that your route there is to download the source from the Android open source project and build the source of the system. Now, the actual, like the Google system services apps, those you can't get from AOSP. But if you're going to go that route, then you enter into a partnership with Google, and then maybe the PDK will be made available to you, the new thing that we announced at Google I/O to help give hardware manufacturers who are working on those devices with the Google added services to get early access to upcoming features on the platform.
Okay.
Might also be worth mentioning the CTS, which is a set of tests which apps, which devices need to pass in order to be considered Android compatible. So if they are developing a new device or something, it's well worth getting hold of the CTS to make sure they're not doing anything that goes and takes the device outside of that test suite and that side of the compatibility definition.
Where can you find the CTS?
The CTS is part of the Android open source project, and you can download it as part of the bundles that come when you follow the instructions at source.android.com.
Bang on.
And if you think that the CTS does not require a certain functionality that it ought to, then you can propose a new test and maybe even write it and offer it as a patch, and maybe they'll accept it as CTS for the next round.
Do we have a
frozen screen?
We do. and it's such a flattering one too.
Yeah.
We're totally back again now. I don't know what happened there. There's a question come through the G Plus chat from Boyd saying that he's not a developer. But is there perhaps a sample app with WebView possibilities? And what can I do to optimize HTML5 for Android to work nice and smoothly? Yeah, there's a few things. First of all, writing an Android application that uses a WebView is pretty simple. You can just drag a WebView onto there and start loading your HTML up. You do still have to use the development environment, whether it's Eclipse or IntelliJ. There are some third-party tools which you can use which would facilitate not using the developer environment. particularly recommend any one over any of the other ones of those. You can just do a Google search for web development on Android, and hopefully you'll come across those products. But if you do want to write an Android app with a web view, it's all pretty simple. It gets a little more complicated when you're looking at making it super smooth, because the hardware acceleration of the web view has varied throughout various versions of Android. There wasn't really any in Froyo and Gingerbread. With Honeycomb, we added some hardware acceleration to the web view, but some of the functionality of the web view wasn't hardware accelerated. And we have an I.O. talk and some details you can look for on the internet about what is hardware accelerated and what isn't. It improved a bit in Ice Cream Sandwich, but it's improved massively in Jelly Bean. The Jelly Bean web view has good hardware acceleration on and fixes many of the issues you would have seen in the Ice Cream Sandwich and prior web views. So the simplest way is not to use hardware acceleration at all, and you won't get great performance. The best way is to optimize it for Froyo and Gingerbread, then Honeycomb and Ice Cream Sandwich, and also Jelly Bean on top. Maybe do hardware acceleration on Jelly Bean and not on the previous ones. It's going to be more consistent from now on. That was a slightly distinct story for each of the platforms before that.
I don't know if I would recommend a web view for like really challenging stuff that needs acceleration anyway. I mean, I think, you know, a web app is a way to get sort of a lowest common denominator application that runs on as many disparate platforms as possible, but it's never going to be best in class on any of them.
Sure, but this, the guy who asked the question is a web developer, so it's clearly his easiest route to market, but we would definitely advocate using of native views and widgets inside of Android.
Yeah, just be aware of the limitations of a web view. You're only going to get so far. I think when you stack all your layers of abstraction on top of each other, then you're going to have some limitations, and I've certainly never found a web app which is as smooth or I thought couldn't be improved by doing such a thing in native.
No.
There was a talk at I.O. This year about making high-performance mobile web apps. I'll stick a link to that in the comments, but I've heard from people who have used the evil Apple iOS version of the Facebook app, which is purely a web app, that it is probably one of the most dire user experiences they've ever had. So it's kind of setting the tone for if Facebook on a Apple device come out with something that's dire, there's not a lot you can do to improve it.
I mean, I'm not saying there's no call for it. I mean, Gmail, for example, uses web views to render some of its content, and that's one of my favorite apps of all time. So I'm not saying there's no place for a web view, but I'm just saying if you're trying to do something really, really kind of responsive and interactive and flashy, then you're going to kind of like run up against the limits of what it can do.
And then plus you've got user expectations and stuff. They're downloading an app from the app, the Play Store. They're going to be at that point where they're kind of expecting a native app. You don't want to see then an embedded web view. So you've got to kind of balance that out as well.
Definitely. Very valid points from both Matt and Nick. Text layout in any app is using a web view is going to be one of the easiest ways of doing that, especially if you're trying to wrap text around images and do custom layouts. But I still put the challenge out there to anyone who wants to produce a web-based application for Android, a web app, and then hand it over and see if we can tell whether or not it's a web app. Every time you pick one up to us, it's instantly obvious that it's a web app. The scrolling's not right. You're trying to do bounce back in JavaScript, or the force field inside Android in JavaScript is going to be tricky. Trying to make anything that looks native or feels, tracks the finger, like a view pager, that kind of view is just tricky in the web without it being janky and slow. So good luck, but I still have hopes for people being able to develop in web technologies.
So we're Android fanboys, so we're going to be like native all the way.
Yeah. And make apps which we can't tell aren't native. But that's all we want.
We also fight for the users.
Yeah. Feel free to do it, just make it, so I can't tell.
Not a big answer. If we've got a bit of time left, I'd like to hear from Yuhani, who won a hackathon this weekend with an interesting hack. I was wondering if you might be able to describe it to us.
Sure. So we weren't the only winners, but we won the Build It Tool category of the thing. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, speak up.
Yes. Lean closer.
Speak up.
Yeah. All right. So, so we won the Google TV category of the hackathon with YouTube and Google TV. Yeah, I think London South. No.
Yeah.
You guys are lagging a bit. Okay. Right. So what we built, basically we stole the idea from the Nexus Q. Because the Nexus Q is not going to come here, so we're just going to build one for us Europeans.
Final point I want to make is
we built a Google TV application.
It's
which
hard
is
to stand
basically
out.
Just a dummy
There's
player.
There's a lot of apps up there.
And so when you fire up the Google TV app, it just shows QR code. And then we have the phone applications and the tablet applications, which you can use to scan the QR code and join the party. And then everybody who scans the same QR code is part of the same party. And then you can just search YouTube videos and push them to the common playlist. And the Google TV application will just play the playlist until it runs out. And they can always push more videos.
So this is using the new YouTube Player API. So basically Google...
So it's a new Player API, so we can actually embed the videos in the application and not launch the YouTube Player. We use the Google Cloud messaging to message so people don't have to be in the Wi-Fi. So you don't want to have to give your own Wi-Fi connection details to you, any random people who happen to be in the party. And then we use we built the application for Android. That's a very regular application with responsive design, with tablet UI and phone UI.
Is that using the new template stuff?
No, because the templates are only available with the app owners on Ice Cream Sandwich, I think, or Heineken. So we want to support the older ones too.
Yeah, and so we have the App Compat Action Bar stuff, yeah, Ice Cream Sandwich only. Well, he says he built it, but I haven't seen a link in Play Store yet, so...
I sent the APK to Matt, so you can see...
Yeah, that's going to be in your face quite soon.
That's your new logo, isn't it? Slogan, isn't it, Nick? No Play Store link, node happened.
Thanks for link, it didn't happen. Yeah, TM. Well, I think that just about brings us to a close. So unless there's any burning questions you guys have been chomping at the bit to ask but haven't been able to get a word in edgeways, then I think we might draw this session to a close. So thank you very much, everyone who joined us live.
One last, you could say if anyone wants... If anyone's got any burning questions. Maybe someone has. Does anyone have any burning questions? Any of the last people who joined in want to ask anything?
I paused for half a second.
Half a second, I know. They are quick, but there might be lag. Does anyone have any questions before we wrap up today? Okay, you should have carried on anyway. Sorry for the interruption. Service, normal service will resume shortly.
But I was just saying thank you everyone for joining us. To everyone on the live stream, everyone watching on YouTube later on, hi people in the future. But we'll do this every week, so 2 p.m. UK time every Wednesday. See you next time.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. Bye, everyone. Bye. Thanks for coming and thanks for watching on YouTube.